Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to the Sports City Kitchen, the Sports City Chef's Kitchen. This is the NFL free-for-all. I'm your host, Brian Hughes, alongside my co-host here, Norm Arendez. Norm, how you doing tonight?
Doing good, man. Ready to get the show going.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are in full-blown off-season mode in the NFL, as you know. The combine just got done taking place last Thursday through Sunday or Saturday, and we're at that point where players are going to start testing free agency. I believe the tagging period ends on the 17th, or the free agency period begins on the 18th of this month. So this is an exciting time if you are. If you are a fan of pretty much any team, right, Norm, because this is basically the part of the year, the first part of the year where your team has an opportunity to improve. And it seems like every year there's teams that really take advantage of free agency. It might not be the biggest move or the sexiest move or the highest priced free agent, but it seems like every year there's these guys that, get picked up and really, really make an impact on the regular season. So I want to talk a little bit about the only division that we haven't talked about yet in the AFC. We started with the AFC West, which is your division with the Chargers, the Raiders, your Chiefs, and then obviously the Broncos. We talked about the AFC North, and we talked about the AFC South. But we have not talked about the AFC East. And this has really been, let's be honest, this has really been a really ugly division in the sense that the Patriots have won 11 titles in a row, right? And have won 13 of the last 15. So the Patriots have pretty much owned this division. Now, my first question to you is, with everything that we saw from Brady and company this last year, with free agency upon us, do you feel like maybe for the first time the Patriots are vulnerable to a team like the Bills to maybe be able to clip them and potentially become the AFC East champs?
Yeah, that's a good question. I want to say yes, but I think I've said that before, and that's just because the hatred that comes out for the Patriots. The problem that the other teams have had between Miami, the Jets, and Buffalo is continuity. They've never really stuck with a plan. They'll hire a coach and, he'll start what he wants to do and they'll build it up. They'll give it 3 years and it's not working and they trash it. And then it comes in the next regime and that lasts 1 year and then this and that and they blame the quarterback. So every one of those teams has had a hard time finding a stronghold they can build off of, whether it's a legitimate coach that has a plan that shows continual improvement, or an elite quarterback that they know they can build around. So, you know, looking at them now, I really like Josh Allen in Buffalo. You know, he's not a standout like Deshaun Watson or Mahomes is, but he's a very good quarterback, and obviously led him to the playoffs. And I like McDermott. So I don't know if they're ready to unseat the Patriots, but they're still going to be right there challenging maybe. I don't see them unseating the Patriots unless the Patriots take a step back. I like Darnold, and I really like Greg Williams, that defensive coordinator for the Jets. That guy always dials up everything he needs. The problem is their offense couldn't stay on the field long enough to help that defense. So, you know, I'd say they're maybe a little notch behind Buffalo. And then Miami, they knocked off the Patriots there at the end of the year. Really impressive. You just wonder if that Flores guy, you know, maybe has a little bit of an inside track on the Patriot way. But I still don't see them really competing for a couple of years. That's my take.
Yeah, and, you know, I have a really hard time with this because when you look at what Bill Belichick and Tom Kraft have created in Buffalo, it reminds me, it's so familiar with a lot of great quarterbacks, right? You end up in a situation where as these guys are aging, you expect them to do more with less, right? Like, you know, for example, like if you looked at Indy's defense when Peyton Manning played there, their defensive end, if you look at Mathis and Freeney, these guys were like 260 pounds or less. Like they were totally drafted specifically predicated on the fact that they were going to rush the passer. So if for some reason you were able to get a lead on the Indianapolis Colts, it was almost a wrap because they could not stop the run. They could not force teams out of the run because that's not the way they were built. So my first question to you, let's start with the AFC East champs, okay? You look at the AFC East champs. This is a very, very critical offseason for them, Norm. You have Tom Brady basically flirting. You know, he's the sexy girl out there on the free agent market. You're talking about a multiple Super Bowl winner. He's won six Super Bowl championships. He knows what it takes to get the job done. He obviously is a proven winner, if you will. And, you know, to be completely honest with you, I know a lot of people are going to say, look, he regressed. I think some of the onus has got to be on New England. I mean, look what they surrounded this guy with. I mean, it was not pretty. He had no tight end. You're talking about plucking Benjamin Watson out of, basically plucking him out of retirement. They had to trade a number two for Mohamed Sanu, who was the third best wide receiver in Atlanta, and he was clearly the best wide receiver they had. And they just really didn't do a good job of putting weapons around him. So you could make the argument, hey, maybe Brady has regressed some, but I also think it's partially on the Pats for not really putting the appropriate amount of weapons around Tom Brady. So if New England is going to make it back to the playoffs and obviously get further than getting knocked out in the divisional round, Norm, what do you see as their team needs for this offseason, and what do they need to do in order to have a fighting chance in the AFC?
Well, they need to bring Tom Brady back. He's their best chance to win. I mean, that's obvious. And then I really think it's just that and O-line. Tom Brady, you know, he doesn't have the ability to extend plays anymore. He never really was that mobile. But, you know, when he was younger, he was a little grittier. He'd fight through things. And he's just not interested in that anymore. But he's still a high-level quarterback. So, you know, they had the injuries to Isaiah Wynn, and I think someone else was injured along the front line. I forgot who it was. And even when they came back healthy, it didn't work out for them. So I do think they do need tight end, and not just a guy that can go catch the ball. They need blocking tight end. That's what made them so good with the double tight end set. Is you can switch up your blocking patterns, and you're not sure which one's going out for a pattern. So I really think just O-line, bring back Tom Brady and maybe a tight end. But, I mean, their defense was great, good enough to win. I mean, you can always add on defense. But it's really simple for them, you know, protect Tom Brady and then these young receivers who are still struggling. With time, everybody gets open, you know. I think with a full offseason with Sanu, if they don't let, I'm sure they're going to keep him since they give up a second-round pick. It'll still work out. So they're not that far off. And I think you are right. I feel that, you know, Belichick, you know, has his way of doing things. It's worked for a long time, but sometimes it doesn't work. And I think he's neglected certain areas, and it bit him last year. You know, but a big part of me, I really want to see the falling out because, you know, everyone always talks about, you know, who's better, Brady or Belichick. Well, you need both of them to be as great as they've been. And, you know, the best comparison I can look at is look at the old Popovich for the San Antonio Spurs. He's talking about one of the greatest coaches in basketball. And ever since he's lost Kawhi, they ain't winning that much, are they? So it's interesting how, you know, I mean, obviously Belichick's the best coach to coach football. But without your guy in the slot, you know, things don't work out that well.
No, you know what? It's a very good point, you know. And to me, when you look at the quarterback and you look at the coach, a lot of times, I mean, it's kind of like the chicken or the egg argument, right? Because
yep.
if you find somebody who has a Hall of Fame quarterback, you're going to be hard pressed to not find a Hall of Fame coach, right? Like they
right.
go hand in hand. Like you look at, you know, Steve Young, or you look at Joe Montana, right? Or you look at Jim Kelly, or you look at, you know, Dan Marino, and you start thinking about who these guys' coaches were in Don Shula. You look at, you know, over at in Buffalo, and I don't know why, but right now I'm drawing a blank. I know Ty's going to tell me here in a second. But and then you go with, you know, Bill Walsh. Like, I think it goes hand in hand, right? Because people forget
yeah.
that Bill Belichick was a coach in Cleveland before he got to New England. And he wasn't horrible, right? I'm not saying he was horrible, but he's not the defensive and offensive mastermind that he's now become, right? Like, he's not,
right.
you know, he's not that guy. And a lot of people want to anoint him that guy. So I think really, you know, what it boils down to is what is your philosophy on building the team, and what is it going to take in order to make Brady happy? Because I do agree with you. I think their best chance of winning is bringing Brady back. And I got to tell
right.
you, I honestly don't think Brady signs unless they significantly upgrade the offense. Look, this team is loaded. And I have no qualms about saying that. You know, we're starting with the division winner here. We're giving them their respect. I know they got bounced in the first round. You're probably going to have some people that, you know, want to bash them or whatnot. But, I mean, this team is loaded. Loaded. Sure, they have a few players that they're going to want to bring back. Obviously, Brady. Devin McCourty is 33. I don't know if they bring him back, but they haven't drafted a first-round safety since drafting Devin McCourty. That's how long it's been since they've invested in the safety position. They're going to probably
right.
want to bring back Kyle Vannoy. But most of these guys are just names, right? You know, Matthew Slater is a phenomenal special teamer, but he's 34. Philip Dorsett is an okay wide receiver. Danny Shelton is a good plug at nose tackle. But these are all just guys. There's nobody that they have to bring back. So I'm going to bring Ty in, and then I'm going to ask you guys both a question. Because to me, I think that they're going to have to bring somebody in via free agency, whether it be wide receiver or tight end. I don't think it's all about money to Brady, and I don't think he's going to sign with the expectation that they're promising to do something in the draft. I think he's going to want to see, hey, you know what, we brought in Hunter Henry. Hey, you know what, we brought in, you know, Tyler Eifert. Or, hey, you know what, we brought in, you know, AJ Green. You know, he's going to want to see, okay, who are the pieces that you're planning to surround me with to provide me the ability to be successful? And part of that, like you said, Norm, might just be, hey, you know what, look, we're going to draft some young guys, but we're gonna go into free agency, and we're going to pick up, you know, an offensive tackle and a guard to help strengthen that offensive line, Tom, to provide you extra time. But without any further ado,
right,
let's get the main chef in the building here. Mr. TP Timeless, how you doing tonight?
I'm all right. How are you guys doing?
Doing all right, man.
Just another day, another dollar. So we're talking AFC East, and as I'm sure you've heard, because I know you've been listening to the show, so the Patriots have won 11 titles in a row for the AFC East. They've also won 13 of the last 15 division titles. I mean, the dominance in this division, Ty, is absolutely extraordinary. When you consider, for example, like the AFC East, and no team has won that division twice in a row in like the last 12 years or something ridiculous. So what I ask Norm, and I'll ask you, is what do they need to do in order to repeat as AFC East champs? Norm mentioned they need to bring back Brady. And if that's part of your equation, do they need to do something in free agency in order to solidify him coming back? What's your thought?
I want to really see what the front office does, because they're really saying that, oh, they may move away from Brady, so on and so forth, but what's behind them isn't that great. I mean, Hoyer knows the system, and he had success other places, but I don't see Hoyer carrying them to a, let me just be fair, a 10-6 season or 11-5, which can win them the division. I don't know how people are mad at him still going 12-4, but that's just the spoil of the, you know, severe NFL fans or Patriot fans. But I don't know if the Chargers are content with Hunter, the tight end out there. If anything, I'd rather have them go after Antonio Gates to be a fill-in. Like, Antonio Gates didn't get re-signed by them, let me go after him easy. I really think they need to fill that tight end position, and that basically be it offensively, because the receivers that they have were all injured. N'Keal Harry, Philip Dorsett, I mean, just throw out names. He was going off of practice squad guys that we've never even heard of. Julian Edelman was missing time, too, so it's like – And he's a Super Bowl MVP. So, like, all of his pieces were missing. He just lost Gronk a year after winning a Super Bowl. So, like, Gronk left after – that's a big piece after winning a Super Bowl, and they still went 12-4. I don't know how people can – you can give me 12-4 right now on my team. I would not be pissed by any means. So, it's like, I don't know what they do if they get rid of Brady right now. For me personally, not even being analytically – They should let Brady walk out that door how he wants to. He brought you 9 Super Bowls and 61. Like, he could have like a 100-foot statue out there, like, to be honest. But the business is the business at the end of the day. The defense was number one for a couple of weeks. They were fighting with you guys, with the San Francisco 49ers, to see who had the best defense. The defense doesn't really need that much tweaking. They just had a speedy offense they had to deal with. And the Chiefs, and other than that, I mean, they're relevant still. If they could give him a shoe-in at the tight end position, they still have Sony Michel, a very decent running back behind him, still young. I mean, what is it, his second or third year? That offense just needs a piece away, and that injury bug just needs to stay out of that Gillette Stadium. I was going to say the locker room, but at least just stay out of Gillette Stadium, and it'll be all right.
So here's what I got, guys, and you tell me if you agree or disagree. Norm, I'll start with you. I got the New England Patriots' biggest needs right now, and I'm not counting on what they probably might do. I'm talking about right now, heading into the offseason. I have quarterback, number one wideout, and a tight end. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, it's retain Brady. I would go offensive tackle and tight end. And I hate the Patriots, so I don't want to see that happen, but I think that Hayden Hurst for Baltimore would be a great, great fit. I just don't see Baltimore trading him to a rival like that within the conference. But there was some talk about you talk about a guy buried in the depth chart just because they drafted well there in Baltimore.
Yeah. Yeah, well, here's the other thing, too, and I think that this is something worth mentioning, because I think a lot of times this stuff gets kind of lost, but I think trades happen right when the market's really barren of the talent that you need. But if you look at the free agency class of 2020, it's pretty good, guys. It's not bad. You got Austin Hooper, who is a legitimate, I mean, in my opinion, I might be wrong, but I think he's a top 10 tight end. I mean, you're talking about a guy that averages 75, 800, and like 8 touchdowns. And that's in Atlanta's offense where he's the fourth choice behind Julio, behind Calvin Ridley, behind, you know, Sanu before he was traded. He's already going to know a guy in the Patriots offense in Sanu. I think he could go there and immediately be a top five tight end. I really do.
He'll want too
and
much
the other
money.
Thing is,
too much money.
Hooper's only 25. Next guy that I think is really interesting for them, Hunter Henry. This is a guy who's ridiculously athletic. He's had some injury woes, but basically the Chargers drafted him to replace Antonio Gates, and he has done a phenomenal job of that when given the opportunity, right? When injuries haven't kind of plagued him. So, you know, that's a name to think about. Jacob Hollister, this is a kid most people, your average fans, aren't going to know about, but he was basically the starting tight end for the Seattle Seahawks last year, and he played really, really well. And to boot, he is an ex-Patriots tight end. This is a guy that the Patriots actually traded for and then traded him to Seattle. So this is a guy that's already familiar with their system, a guy that's already familiar with the Patriot way, if you will, already familiar with Brady. So that could be a potentially nice fit. And I got two more for you. I really wanted to see Greg Olsen there, but I'm going to start with one of Ty's guys, and I know it's going to drive him crazy, but he's kind of had a renaissance since he's been with the Colts, and that's Eric Ebron. Look, the guy may have – he may bobble some balls from here and there, but nobody can question the dude's athleticism. He's athletic. He can block. He can definitely get open out in the field, and he's really done a great job for Indianapolis in that role. And then I'll throw in just one flyer, and I don't think that this guy would get picked up, but he's still only 29, guys, and that's Tyler Eifert. You know, I just mentioned him. You know, he's also a guy had major injury bugs throughout his career. Last year, he did remain healthy, 43 receptions, almost 500 yards. So I'm just saying the cabinet is not completely barren. If you're Tom Brady, I mean, any one of those guys is a significant upgrade over what you have now. Go ahead, Norm.
Yeah, I was going to say my question to that is, what's interesting is that all makes sense, but I remember when the Patriots brought in Dwayne Allen, I think 2 years ago, and why didn't that pan out? And then when they brought in Sanu, trust me, I grabbed him off fantasy right away, and I thought that'd be great, but that didn't work out. So, you know, I mean, even though those names sound good in the system, I'm not so sure, you know, I don't see Belichick paying money to any of those guys, at least the money they're going to want. You know, when there's no guarantee they're going to work out. Of all those, I would guess maybe Hunter Henry, only because you can use his injury past as leverage for a cheap 2-year deal. So that's my quick 2 cents.
I'm going to go on the other end of the spectrum. I think that you're going to be surprised. I think that this year the Patriots are going to spend money. I think they're going to have to spend money in order to keep Tom. I don't think a sweetheart deal where they pay Tom $30 million and surround him with the same cast of characters that he's currently surrounded with is going to be enough to keep Tom a Patriot. I think he wants to be a Patriot, but I think last year, I think he was frustrated with the talent that was around him. And he's at a point in his career, like Ty just said, he should be able to kind of, you know, write his own check. He should be able to go out as he wants to go out. Well, nobody wants to go out, right, you know, on their back or as a loser, if you will, proverbial loser. But the team that the Patriots have surrounded him with, the fact that they got to 12-4, at least in my opinion, was much more indicative of how good that defense was than anything to do with the offense. The offense was just absolutely anemic. And so what I'm saying is, and I could be wrong, this is just my opinion, I truly do not believe, I know we've heard the reports, and I'll be shocked if he does, that, you know, in, that New England and Brady and company are talking, right, we're talking in Indy, trying to hammer out a deal. I can't imagine that Brady would sign unless he absolutely knows that they're bringing in certain pieces to the mix. And the thing is, Norm, is that if you have one piece like Sanu, like you were talking about, right, where, you know what, I'm going to go pick him up off the waiver wire. The problem is when you look at all these teams that have one great wide receiver or even good, not great, let's just say good wide receiver, the reason why that wide receiver is not nearly as good, nor does he get the receptions he should, is because that's the only person that that defense really has to focus on. When you now get a legit number one tight end, you have a James White, a legit receiving threat out of the backfield, it starts to open things up. You got Julian Edelman that comes back as your slot guy. It opens things up. I've never seen in my life a slot receiver doubled more than I saw this last year with Julian Edelman. And I'm just being honest. I know slot guys are quick. I've seen a lot of really good slot guys. I've never seen a slot guy doubled more than this last year against Julian Edelman. So, Ty, what's your thoughts on that, and which way are you leaning, more towards Norm or more towards my line of thinking?
Well, see, it's interesting because Julian Edelman has been hurt for the past couple of seasons. And I remember firsthand when he tore ACL up, it was against the Lions, so I seen it firsthand on the play and everything, but he's no longer a secret. He's not going to, just like you said, he's not going to see a lot of one of those one-on-one situations. So it kind of takes that away from Brady, but they're going to have to go get somebody underneath to kind of spell him the way that he did Wes Welker. You know, so they're going to need another guy like that. They got rid of Braxton Berrios, who Braxton Berrios was his, you know, his successor, but now Braxton Berrios is with the Jets now. If they could get Nikhil to do his thing on the outside, I think he'll be fine. But receiver wise, if they think they need another guy outside of Edelman, that'll be challenging to see who fulfills that. But I think they're fine with Edelman as long as they can get some attention away from him. But like I said, if they can get a tight end that they could believe in and not wait on a guy like Greg Olsen, I like the fact that Greg Olsen was the talk. I want to say within a week or two ago. I'm hoping that he can make that happen. Or they said he may potentially go to Seattle, so that'll be a toss up too if he ends up with a Seahawks jersey. But if they can get somebody that could draw attention and leave Edelman in those 1-on-1 situations, I think they're damn fine to at least compete for the NFC East division. The AFC East division. I disagree with Norm on the Sam Darnold. After Sam Darnold said he sees ghosts, I don't think it'll be any easier year by year to start making interesting blitz packages for them. So I think the only thing that does press them is the Bills in that division.
Yeah, and you know what? I definitely think that division, being as weak as it's been, guys, is definitely one of the main reasons don't get me wrong, the Patriots have been, you know, a model franchise. But I definitely think that this division's dysfunction is definitely part of the reason why the Patriots have basically been allowed to rule this division unchecked. Let's go to the Buffalo Bills. I think the Buffalo Bills are actually really interesting because if you look on paper at their free agents, they don't have any quote-unquote priority free agents, right? Lorenzo Alexander, he's a pass rusher. Shaq Lawson's a pass rusher. Both those guys are older. Alexander's 37. Lawson's 27. So, you know, yeah, I think they'd like to have him back. Jordan Phillips, a good defensive tackle, but he's not even a starter for them. Ed Oliver took over his spot halfway through the year as a three technique. So they don't have one starter that's a free agent. So Frank Gore, their backup running back, is available. I see, you know, when I look at this team, number one, I still feel like they need a tight end. I said this last year, and, like, basically everybody said, no, you're wrong. You know, they don't need a tight end. That's crazy. Buffalo's fine. And I don't know. I didn't see, you know, I didn't see the production from the tight end that I'd like to see. You know, they got a bunch of names. You know, I know they picked up Tyler Croft, formerly of Cincinnati, Lee Smith. Yeah, he's all right. Dawson Knox. But there's nobody there that I think to myself, there's a good security blanket for a young guy like Josh Allen. So for me, guys, I'd like to see them get a tight end. I think they could get better on the offensive line. And I've got a tie here at either edge rusher because they are losing two, or running back. And that, you know, Singletary is obviously probably going to be the starter. But with Frank Gore out now, you're going to need somebody to, you know, take 30, 40% of the snaps because he's still pretty young. What say you, Norm? What do you think about Buffalo this offseason, and what do they need to do really to take that next leap to basically take over the top spot from New England?
Yeah, I really think a dynamic running back would help them a lot. I think they're pretty good up front. I mean, every team in the NFL could use more offensive line help, but I think they're okay there. I think if you get a more explosive running back with some size, I mean, if they got a premium running back, that would be really good. And I do agree with the tight ends. I think they're more of a play action type team, and having a receiving tight end would help. Defensively, I would just say someone up front to apply more pressure, but their back end's not bad, so. Yeah, they're built very differently. They're built just like Tennessee and kind of those, even I'll say the Rams, although the Rams have a lot more star power, I think, but just built off that play action and good defense. That's the kind of team they are. They're not a spread you out, throw it down the field type team.
All right, Ty, what's your thoughts on the Buffalo Bills? What do they need to do in order to take that next step and pass New England as the top dog in the AFC East?
To be honest, I think more or less just to say confidence, because they made the playoffs. They've gotten there. Their defense is recognizable. The secondary on the back end is notable. Like, they make plays. They stay in games. I think they're going to have to get a workhorse type of running back. I like the fact that they got Croft and Knox at the tight end position. I just think they more or less need confidence. I mean, they're competing. They've been chasing the Patriots, and now it's like to get out of the shadow and knowing that Brady is older now. Brady's going to be 43 when the season starts, and hopefully he is there so they can have that confidence to beat the older Brady and say, you know what, we're the young guys on the block in the division that at least look like we could be the successors of this division. Just like you said, it was mentioned before, I think their defense is decent. They could tweak it a little bit, maybe a linebacker, maybe somebody up front, because I think their pass rush is fine, but maybe a DT that they can go after. But offensively, if they just could keep that confidence and keep putting points on the board, because we've seen what type of games they've had this year. They've upset teams and put up massive points, like upsetting Dallas in Dallas. Like nobody thought Dallas would lose that game, and they brought them to the back of the woodshed to take care of the Cowboys. So it's like, they're ready for the big stage. They just have to knock off the evil empire up there in Massachusetts. I think they're maybe a piece here and there. Offensively, like I said, a workhorse running back. I think they're fine at the tight end position because these guys are, you know, you're not going to really get a stud to come to Buffalo unless they really buy into what McDermott is preaching. But other than that, Cole Beasley is a good piece at the slot. We're comparable to like a Julian Edelman. Well, yeah, that's really what I got with Buffalo. More or less just confident to know that they can do it.
All right, guys, let's go. Let's move over to Miami. Miami, in my opinion, was an absolute train wreck last year. They basically had a fire sale on anybody on their team that could play. Traded Tunsil, traded Fitzpatrick. You know, granted, they did win a few games. But what that has done for him is head coach Brian Flores and company now own three picks in the top 25. And so the question becomes, I think it's pretty clear that they need a quarterback. I think we would all agree with that. Do you get a guy like a Teddy Bridgewater? Do you get a guy like, you know, insert name here, you know, a younger guy that you think may be able to potentially start, you know, Andy Dalton. I personally believe, guys, that there's two quarterbacks in this class that are franchise guys. I think pretty clearly Joe Burrow is going to go number one overall to the Bengals. I don't think if you offer them three first-round picks that they would trade out of that spot. So then the question becomes, if you're Miami at five and every team in the NFL knows that you need a quarterback, do you sit at five or do you try to trade up to number two or three to get Tua Tagovailoa? Medicals have looked good, and most people would tell you, and I know this is more for Norm than it is Utah, but most people would tell you if you watch these guys, especially throughout their career, a lot of people actually say that Tua Tagovailoa is actually the better quarterback. More accurate, you know, really played better, you know, throughout his career. You know, obviously Burrow had a big second year, but with that said, you got your three first-round picks, Norm. Do you get your franchise signal caller? Do you trade up to number two or three to ensure that you get your signal caller? What do you do with these three pieces? Do you just stay pat and kind of take the draft as it comes to you? What's your thoughts for the Dolphins? I kind of feel like with them trading for Rosen last year, and that really was a horrible trade, but I kind of feel like they got to get their franchise guy this year, right?
In my opinion, that's the wrong mentality. You don't force, I got to get my franchise guy. Trying to figure out which of these guys are franchise or which are not is the hardest thing in the world. And I don't believe in Tua. I don't think he's a franchise guy. And Burrow, I say yes only because of the size. I like the bigger quarterbacks. The guys that are 6'6", big body guys, and if you're mobile too, even better. Those are the kind of guys that I think that have what it takes to then be able to stick with and build around. You know, the littler guys, that squirmy guys like Kyler Murray, he's not going to equal anything in my opinion. That's just strictly opinion, but. So, you know, to try to revolve everything around your draft saying this is going to be our guy, you're kind of forcing that coach and the program to go that direction. We've seen that so many times. And, you know, there's the rebuttal. Look at Darnold. I mean, he's a guy that I think could be a franchise guy. He's got the size. He's got the arms. He's got the smarts. Maybe he won't, though. So it's a very hard thing to pick out. And I'm glad I'm not a GM.
All right, Ty, what's your thoughts on Miami's situation? I mean, they literally traded away, I don't think anybody would disagree with this, their two best players on their team in Minkah Fitzpatrick and Larry Tunsil in order to gain additional first-round capital. In my mind, if you're trading away the two best players on your team, it better be for capital in order to move up to grab the guy you covet. What's your thoughts?
If you've ever seen the movie The Professional and Gary Oldman looked for backup and extra help, he screamed everyone, man. It's tough for the Dolphins right now just because of the way that this season went, how a lot of these players don't want to be there. They're going to have to restore everything, and knowing that Flores is there and he's one of those coaches that came from the Patriot tree, so it's like he's probably trying to turn that system into the Patriot way. He's going to have to get guys to buy into the system. It's going to be very tough, but they do have, like, at least receivers and Parker and company out there to make plays, but for them to get rid of Drake at the running back position, they're going to have to fill that void. And there's one thing about Tua. See, this is what's bothering me about Tua. Tua's, I hate to say this about him because I love him as a quarterback, but he's injury prone. And it's either his ankle or something with his leg, now it's his hip, and of course he's going to get sacked. It's not like he's going to go a whole season and not see a blitz come after him, and he's going to get hit. Of course that's going to happen. So it's like, what if he don't get up or something? Like that's something that teams are going to have to worry about if he's fully healed from the surgery. So that's something that I'm staying away from, especially what the Dolphins were dealing with last season. Like, If they go after a big quarterback like Norm was saying, I think Justin Herbert out of Oregon would be the guy, but I'm hoping that he falls into Detroit, Michigan, and to be able to succeed Matthew Stafford. But that's a whole other division, a whole other story. But if they do go after a guy like Tua, they definitely have to tweak up front immediately. They'd have to get protection up front to make sure Tua can stay upright, because Tua can make every throw in the building. He doesn't have an arm to, you know, hit the yardage that Mahomes can hit, but he can make a lot of those throws, and a lot of the times he makes those throws, those receivers are running in stride, and that's something that you need at that level in the NFL. So, of course, they can use a new quarterback like now, because I don't know how much they're, you know, putting in the trust in the basket, if you will, for the other Fitzpatrick. So we'll see. But the Dolphins, they need a ton of help, especially defensively, but their offense needs to fill a lot of questions too, especially where they came out the gate up against the Ravens. The Ravens put up 59 points on them. That's horrible, especially losing at home like that. So that there's a lot of tweaking that needs to be done in South Beach.
All right, boys. So let's move our attention now and talk to the Jets. The Jets, I feel like, are in a really bad spot. You look at the Jets, you know, they've got Robbie Anderson, their unrestricted free agent wide receiver. He's a free agent. Brian Poole's a free agent. Their starting center, Ryan Khalil, he's a free agent. I don't think he's going to re-sign either. Remember, Khalil was talked out of retirement 2 years ago by the Jets. He's now 35. Demaryius Thomas is obviously not what he used to be. I don't think they're going to re-sign him. So you start going down this list. Bilal Powell's out. David Fells is out. They have a lot of names here that are free agents. No primetime guys, but I looked at some of the stats for their guys. And let's start with the big free agent acquisition from last offseason, Le'Veon Bell. So Bell ran the ball 245 times, guys, and he only picked up 789 yards. He averaged 3.2 yards per carry, the lowest of his entire career. Now, a lot of people are going to say, well, he was out the entire 2018 season. But what's more alarming is that if you look over the last four games of the season, he actually averaged less than 3 yards a game. It got worse. Mm-hmm. It got worse as the season wore on. He had 3 rushing touchdowns last year, tied for lowest of his career, and even his receiving, yardage markers at 7.0 was significantly lower than previous years where he was at 8.2, 10.3, 8.9. Has Le'Veon lost the allure of being one of the two or three best backs? He's only 28, or is this more of an indictment of just how bad the Jets' offense, and in particular the Jets' offensive line, is? What's your thoughts, Norm?
Cut him. You don't pay running backs big money. That's what I think. Cut him. He's not going to make the difference on his own.
Norm's thought is always to cut the running back, regardless of who it is.
Third round running backs in the draft cost way less, and they always work out pretty good. Cut them.
Should they cut bait with Le'Veon Bell? I mean, they just gave this dude a ton of money last offseason. Do they cut bait? Do they need to improve the offensive line? What's going on in New York with the Jets?
Of course, they need to tweak that offensive line, but I don't think they get rid of Le'Veon Bell, even though they've been talking about he may potentially walk somewhere, but I doubt it, especially with my little cousin Bilal Powell out of there. You know, hopefully they can try and get him back in the door, but we'll see how that happens. But right now, where they got a guy that was at least mentioned for the past couple of seasons before he sat out that whole season, that he was at least a top three running back in the game, and I think the only thing that happened is that he wasn't seeing the same opportunities up front. I think that if they get him his blocking, he definitely could be peaching behind that line of scrimmage and make plays. So I think they hang on to him. I know that you guys think that there's late round possibility for good running backs, but you got one in your stable. Hopefully he remains healthy and then gets some protection up front so they can make holes. And I think Le'Veon should be just fine.
Yeah, it's definitely interesting to me, man, because I'm struggling a little bit here because I honestly believe that Le'Veon Bell is still a good back, and that if you put him, for example, like on Dallas, I think he's still a 1,200-yard runner and probably 10 touchdowns. But you have to think as a team about what your situation is and what a guy is going to bring to your team. And right now, they're paying this dude like $9 or $10 million a year, Ty, to run into the back of his offensive lineman and gain 2.5 yards of carry. Like, they need to make a commitment this offseason to improving their offensive line. Whatever you want to take that as, that's what they got to do, because their offensive line is not gaining any movement. You figure get a fullback if you have to. Whatever you have to do, that's what they need to do, because their offensive line did not get much movement. And you know what? I actually had a newfound respect for Sam Darnold, because when he was out last year with mono, watching Trevor Siemian, watching some of these other clowns play quarterback back there, that was some of the most pitiful football that I've seen in my entire life. And at least once Sam Darnold regained the starting quarterback spot, the team at least looked like an NFL team, which shows you that he's talented. But that the Jets are a wreck. I mean, they definitely need to re-sign Robbie Anderson. He's Sam Darnold's favorite deep threat. They definitely need to re-sign him. They definitely need to improve the offensive line, no question about it. Greg Williams likes to blitz. They might have to look at some edge rushers. I don't know if Jaquiel Polite has developed quite the way that, you know, they probably were hoping that he would have. You know, I know that Quinnen Williams was injured, you know, and, for a bit last year. Leonard Williams was traded. So they definitely got to look to revamp the defense, but they definitely got to look to build this offensive line. But to me, I think that this is a two-team race. I think this is New England and Buffalo, and these other two teams are still in the basement, and they're going to remain in the basement because of how bad offensively and defensively these lines are. It's amazing to me, guys, that, you know, all the history and the data that we have in the NFL that teams haven't figured out by now, that you have to build from the trenches. Everybody talks about the quarterback. Everybody talks about the running backs or wide receivers. Well, none of that works if you don't have the five guys up front to block. And you can even include the sixth guy in the tight end or even the seventh guy in the fullback. You've got to have guys that can block. And I just don't think, as of right now, that the Jets have enough pieces. Lauren, give me your thoughts, final thoughts on the Jets and the NFC East. Who do you see winning this division next year?
Well, I think you're a fool if you don't pick the Patriots, because they continue to win. Like Ty says, 12 wins, even on a down year, is pretty remarkable. I still do, and I'm not saying I'm putting my money on the Jets, but I think the Jets are one of those teams, like quite a few others, that they have enough talent in certain pieces. They're probably going to have a softer schedule. And, you know, a couple things can go right. Next thing you know, they're at 9-7, or, you know, maybe 9-5, and they're you know, everyone's like, what the heck happened? And they're close to making a playoff run. Again, that playoff run will stop very short. But I just think, you know, the Jets are one of those teams that could surprise some people.
Ty, what's your final thoughts here before we move on to the last question tonight?
I'm going to be brutally honest. If Brady stays, I think they still run this division. I know this pisses a lot of people off. I know there's a lot of AFC East people that come to the kitchen. But if Brady sticks around and they could just remain healthy, I think that they still threaten. In the words of Ric Flair, to be the man, you got to beat the man. And if it's not them, it's Buffalo, because Buffalo's at least got to the playoffs the past two seasons. They're making improvements. They look like they're sturdy. I don't think that there's going to be a worse to first with the Dolphins. And the Jets,
they have some flash, but right now, ever since he's came out of your area, your region of USC, I have not been a buyer or seller of Sam Darnold. And once he got on Monday Night Football, where everybody heard him say, "I see ghosts," every time they play the Jets, they're going to come up with some, you know, interesting blitz packages, send rushers from areas that he doesn't know where it's coming from. He's going to be erratic and throw the ball away or end up turning the ball over. I think that's going to remain to happen until Darnold builds that confidence and is ready to be, you know, be that guy to take the reins of New York, let alone he's on the biggest stage in America of New York City. So even though they play in Jersey, but still, yeah, they have to deal with the New York media. But still, right now, it's the Patriots until somebody proves that they can do it. And second place, it'll be the Bills.
All right, boys. Well, the last topic that I want to bring up, and I think it's important, the NFL Combine, as we mentioned, Norm, at the beginning of the show, that this just took place this last weekend. And I really like the new format. I don't know if you guys got an opportunity, but in years past, like, I would literally take, you know, Thursday and Friday off because they always started at, like, you know, 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning Pacific time. You could never really get to watch all the drills, you know, if you were somebody like me that kind of a draft junkie. Well, they now did it in prime time, which I thought was really cool, which started at 6 o'clock Western time, you know, and run through the drills. And I just wanted to get your guys' opinion. Norm, I'm going to start with you. You know, I don't know if you got a chance to watch any of the drills. I don't know if you got a chance to see any of the performances that were turned in. But my question to you would be, what is your favorite drill that they have at the Combine? Why? And then if you watch a Combine or read anything about it, what was your favorite performance this year from the Combine?
Yeah, I'm not really a combine guy. I'm a harsh critic when it comes to college kids. I don't buy into any hype whatsoever. I they have to be on the big stage and they have to do well before they earn my respect. And even though they're phenomenal talent, I'm not disrespecting them. I'm just saying I've seen way too many guys with all these numbers that just flame out to turn out to nothing. So really, there's only one highlight I like about the NFL draft, and that's Rich Eisen running the 40.
All right, I love it, man. I love it. Ty, same question to you, sir. What's your favorite drill? Why? And then also, if you caught anything or read anything, what was your favorite, you know, performance from this weekend?
The 4.15 40. That's the most impressive thing to me. Like, he came close to the damn record. Anybody that sniffs let me just say, anything better than a 4.3, I'm all eyes and ears about. My favorite thing in there is, you know, the shuttle. I like to see how quick people can get in and out of breaks, and I also like the receiver gauntlet, being able to catch passes from either side, and hopefully they can catch all, you know, six or seven passes they have to make before they have to sprint the sideline. I love that, to see if a receiver could deal with these bullets being thrown at them on each side and they're getting up the field. Those are my best things about the combine, but I'm more or less just like Norm to a T. I don't get hype off of too much of the combine or too much of the draft, even though I do like to see what my team does or anybody in Sports City to see what their team does. But then other than that, it's like, what if these rookies don't pan out? You know, that's the one thing that I worry about. A lot of people don't jump into a Randy Moss off the gate. Like, if Randy will come out and put out 18 touchdowns, it's like, that's what people think can happen. And it doesn't happen, and they call him a bust if it doesn't happen in year two. So it's like, I want to wait to see this flower bloom before we already say, oh, he's a great first-round pick, and this has a third, and he doesn't pan out. So it's like, let these guys get that pressure off their back. But, I mean, that's us, and we're so edgy on seeing these guys come to create or be a piece early, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I love the combine. I love the whole pageantry of it. I love seeing small school guys be able to compete on the large stage versus the big school guys. And I just like watching them show out. You know what I mean? I really do. I like watching these guys get an opportunity to, you know, basically show their skills. And I got to tell you, there was several guys that really, really impressed me. You mentioned the, you know, the 4.29 40, but I'm going to give you two other guys. So number one for me is Isaiah Simmons. This is the kid that is a linebacker. He's 6'4", 240 pounds. He ran a 4.38 40 and jumped 38 inches. Now, to put that in perspective, and I know you guys probably you don't follow this, but I'm just putting this perspective. The only other human being that I could find, and I went back 10 years, the only other human being that I could find that was over 6'2", that weighed over 235 pounds, that ran a sub 4.44 40, was a guy by the name of Megatron, a.k.a. Calvin Johnson. So I would say that he's in elite company. And this dude, he plays linebacker for Clemson, but he's also lined up as a slot receiver or slot corner. He's lined up at safety. He's lined up all over the field, and I think he's going to be a guy that they're going to – NFL teams are going to be salivating, because you have guys like Kelce, Kittle, that are big physical guys that can basically muscle the smaller guys, but the, you know, the linebackers can't keep up with them. Well, this dude's 6'4", 240. He's going to be able to not only keep up with them, but he's basically about the same size. The other guy, I got to give some love to the big uglies, and that's Tristan Wirfs, offensive lineman from Iowa. He's been stellar all year. A lot of people kind of talked about him as the top interior offensive lineman coming into the year. And then several other players have had phenomenal years, were quote unquote more athletic. Well, all he did was go to the combine at 6'5", 320 pounds, and set a record for the best vertical jump and broad jump ever recorded for an interior offensive lineman. He jumped 36 and a half inches. That's over 3 feet vertical for a man that's over 320 pounds. Had a broad jump of 121 inches, which is over 11 feet, and oh, by the way, ran a 4.85 40. So, uber athletic guy, and you know, I just think that when you look at the broad jump and vertical guys, you're talking about lower body explosiveness. I think that does relate with offensive linemen. I think that is definitely something that you would look for. So, I'm not going to bore you guys to death. I know that that's something that myself and, you know, some of our old hosts like James Greenwood would sit here and chat about. But, Norm, we got about 2.5 minutes left. Give me your thoughts. Give me a final thought here on the show. Give me something you'd like to, you know, you want to close out for, you know, from the NFL, something you thought about this last week before we get out of the kitchen tonight.
Yeah, no, I'm just really anxious for the action start happening. I mean, obviously, seeing where Tom Brady falls, I really don't see him leaving New England. I think it's in the best interest for both of them. I think they find a way to make that work. That's the first domino to fall, and then everything else kind of fall into place from there. Just excited to see that go, and then see how the Chiefs draft.
All right. Ty, same question. Give me a final thought. Anything that you want to, you know, briefly mention here in the NFL topic or anything else that we didn't get a chance to cover before we close up the kitchen tonight?
Oh, no, we took care of business as best as possible. I agree with Norm to get ready, Paul. I feel like I'm going to say this to Kraft and Belichick. I feel like it would be disrespectful if they, you know, didn't want to sign Brady back after all he did. And he was that guy that came to Foxborough, Massachusetts with a box of pizza and said, "I'm the best decision you've ever made." And did he lie to you? No, he did not. Even at the age of 43, he went 12-4, and people are complaining. Like, I don't know who complains at 12-4. What do you want? Are you still used to 16-0? Like, is that the bar he set? Like, I don't get it. But I'm just like, Norm, man, I love this football talk. At least we get to talk about it year-round as best as we can. And throw the business out, and more or less we're getting close to the month of April, so I know the draft nuts and gurus and everybody's ready to get their fill in on the draft. But this is excellent stuff, getting my feet on here in the kitchen, man. And stay tuned, Sports City. We'll be back, I think, Wednesday. If we don't do a cookout, we'll definitely be here Thursday with a cat fan. On that note, tell a friend to tell a friend that it's the Chimp again. And if they don't know, now they know.
All right, thanks, CP Timeless. Thank you, Norm, for joining me tonight. Yeah, you know, it's interesting, guys. We're definitely going to keep a close eye on the CBA. We didn't get a lot of cover on the CBA. The player representatives have went ahead and voted to send it through to the basically all the league members, which is all the players. So we'll see how that vote goes. Essentially, they're talking about expanding the season to 17 games within the next couple of years and also adding two additional wild card games. So you'd have two additional games a year, at least one additional game, but two additional playoff games and then potentially another bye. So something to think about. Next week we will be switching over to the NFC, the NFC West. We'll be talking about the NFC West. We'll be talking about the news and notes from around the league. I want to thank my co-host, Norm Arendis, again. I want to thank TP Timeless for joining us. A lot of great talk. I want to also say to all the New England fans out there, you've been spoiled. Appreciate it. Enjoy it. But I honestly think those Mafia might be coming for you. So like Ty said, tell a friend to tell a friend. It's the Chefs again. And if you don't know, you better tune in next week.